Another first for the Catholic Man Show. We are coming to you live from Assisi.
When you say live,
I'm meaning, yeah, you're right. We are recording this. It is not live.
We are alive. Here.
In Assisi.
And if you were here with us,
it would be live.
It would be so live.
Dude, I'm so grateful for you and your distinctions. Thank you.
You just about
lied to everybody.
Perjured yourself.
Yeah, which I'm grateful you set me straight. This is quality friendships. That's what they're for.
Indeed.
Dude, I can't believe it. We are here on pilgrimage. We're in Assisi, a beautiful day here, and a day that was very impactful, both like from a standpoint of just being able to be with everybody here on pilgrimage, but also like from just a spirituality standpoint, getting to see the body of St. Carlos Acutis, getting to see the tomb of St. Francis, getting to see St. Clair, of Assisi. Like, I mean, it was just
right.
It was just almost spiritual overload.
Yeah, you know, going to the tomb of St. Francis. I mean, this is a guy whose impact on the church is, you know, the list of people who have impacted the church more than St. Francis is a small list, right?
They call him the second Jesus.
Yes.
I mean,
And all of the things that the Franciscan order has done.
Yeah, for the church.
For the church over the years.
Of course.
And then you've got the other people, you know, the St. Clair, whose vocation was a direct reflection of St. Francis himself.
Right.
And just his witness, his testimony. And then some of the, you know, his work in other parts of the country, other parts of the world, too. Like when he went to the Holy Land. Mm-hmm. He was expecting to get killed.
Right.
But the Saracens there were so impressed with his holiness, they're like, you know what? This guy can stay.
Also, very small guy.
Way smaller than I thought.
Very.
I have to be honest, I was my impression was more like a Little John from Robin Hood, like a big, burly, broad-shouldered dude. Not at all.
Not at all. No, he was a very small guy. Also, I'm assuming that most of the people at that time were smaller than today's, like the average, but still felt like he was smaller than...
He was not very big.
Not very big. but man, it has been so great to be able to be with those who joined us on pilgrimage. We'll have an episode here with Father Stuart Krevkor, our spiritual guide as well. And... here pretty soon. I think we're going to be going to Rome next. We'll be here in Assisi for a couple of days.
We're going to Cascia. We're doing a day trip to Cascia.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And we're going to stop at Lanciano on our way to Rome.
Dave, there was something that happened.
And San Giovanni.
Something that happened today though that was really cool because our wives were there to witness.
And we've been telling them.
It's
this
pretty,
whole time.
This whole time.
Like, babe, I promise. Like, we are huge, so big in our own minds.
We are, for sure, D, possibly C-list Catholic celebrities.
C-minus. Double minus.
Tell them.
So, we're here in Assisi, just enjoying...
going to get gelato.
Getting some gelato. Assisi is... there's something about it that just... It's one of my favorite places. I think it's the saints, but you know, there's a lot of saints in Rome too, but I don't know. Assisi is just great. So, you know, we've just had mass in, one of the private chapels of the Basilica of St. Francis. We enjoyed a fantastic meal.
Which you had pigeon.
I had, I forget how you say pigeon in Italian, but it was like basically, Assisian pigeon, which was incredible. It was, I know it sounds weird. That's why I ordered it, but it was amazing. Anyway, so we're walking to get some gelato, and then Adam, you said something, and somebody heard you and recognized your voice and said, "Is that the Catholic Man Show?" And that guy happened to be right next to my wife, Lady Pamela, and she was like, yes, it is. Go talk to him. And he came out and was like, is that Adam? And you turned around. And anyway, it was just so cool to get to run into this guy who, like, he just recognized you just simply by the sound of your voice. Like, oh, I know there's only one voice who that could be.
There's only one annoying voice that sounds like this.
Yeah.
And it is Adam.
Anyway, shout out to Kel.
From Illinois.
And his family.
Yeah. It's great to have
everybody surnamed Kel-El.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's had that his whole life, but, you know, it was pretty super what he did.
Yeah.
It was just so cool. So we took a picture with him.
Yeah.
It was just here in Assisi.
Right.
Okay. In the square of Santa Chiara, which is the church of St. Clair. You know, incredible.
It was
really just a providential moment.
Yeah. Yeah. For this episode, I wanted to talk about a pillar of fatherhood that I've been reflecting on and thinking about. We've talked a lot about over the course of the years, you know, what fatherhood, like what are the three things that really a father does, whether you're a spiritual father, whether you're a biological father, in some sort of fatherhood. There's really three things that a father is called to do, and it's protect, provide, and establish.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, we've talked about protecting before, like what that looks like, both from a physical standpoint and a natural standpoint, a supernatural standpoint. You know, that in fact, we even had an episode recently with Father Maury of Clear Creek Abbey. He's talked about like the importance of fatherhood, especially from a spiritual warfare nature, that, you know, that the evil one has to go through you first,
yeah,
you know, to get to your family.
Which, if you haven't listened to that episode, I highly recommend it. Father Maury was just classic Father Maury and just
fantastic.
Was wonderful.
Yeah. And so I think from a natural perspective, men understand protecting and providing, right? Providing not just from a monetary standpoint, but are we providing our children with the opportunity to pray? To develop their prayer life? Are we providing them with being exposed to the supernatural graces, to exposed to the sacraments? Mm-hmm. I think those two things.
The protecting one, I think, you know, as times change, so do the threats. And we've talked about this too, but I do think that there are a lot of men out there who just, it hasn't occurred to them. Maybe they're in a friend group that hasn't given much thought to this. And I know that, you know, if our friends hadn't pondered these things as well, if I wasn't blessed with the community that I have, I don't know where I would be when it comes to things like deciding what kind of technology I allow into my house for my children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is squarely under that protecting mantle.
Yeah, that's a good
right?
point.
So I do. We don't. It's not what we're going to talk about today, but I just want to make that point that as fathers, that is on you. You cannot delegate this to your wife. I mean, my opinion is that men are uniquely suited to be the one who is going to establish these rules for your household. And shame on you if you're delegating that to your wife about, oh, well, she wants them to have smartphones or, you know, whatever. No, you're the father of this household. This is actually your realm,
mm-hmm.
where you have to be the one who is going to establish some of these rules about what are you going to decide is safe for your children? Because there's a lot, you know, as we continue, the initial exposure of pornography for children is getting younger, and it's like insanely, it's grossly young.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we have to give thought to.
And obviously those thoughts and plans and execution should be in union with your wife.
Absolutely.
But I wanted to talk about the third pillar today a little bit more.
Sure.
Establish, because I do think
it's less obvious what that means.
It's less obvious, and it's clear to me that it's the weakest of the three, both on a natural and supernatural level.
Mm-hmm.
From a natural level, like we've seen the plague of the 28 32-year-old man still living at home, not really having a real job or having kind of a direction in their life of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's because the mom and dad think that they have to continue supporting them in some capacity.
It's, you know, that's a multifaceted problem. There's economic factors behind that as well that I don't want to downplay.
Sure.
But absolutely. Because, you know, maybe your son is living at home but is well-established in who he is and, you know.
Right. I'm painting some broad brushes here, but I think
totally.
I think you understand what my sentiment is. So I think that there's that, but then there's also the supernatural aspect of establishing as a father and cultivating the environment in your home to thrive in the Christian life, and you know, cultivating meaning the etymology of that word, you know, is to till, which as I have come to kind of the more of the homestead lifestyle, it has a different meaning to me than when it before, because yeah. Tilling is tough. It's hard work. It's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting. And you still have to do it, because if you don't do it, there won't be fruit.
Yeah, we were just visiting a winery yesterday, and we were having a conversation very parallel to this about a realization you and I have both come to in recent years, how no matter what kind of, whether you're a farmer or a rancher or anything where you're trying to do something with the land.
Yeah, gardener.
Anything with the land, you are actually only one thing, and you are a grower of soil alone, okay? You know, they say ranchers are really, you're really a grass farmer. That's what you are. You're just growing grass. Sit there and let the cows eat it. That's really what you're doing. You're growing grass. But we, you know, we were looking at these gorgeous fields of and rows of the vineyards. Vineyards, thank you. And you know, he talked a lot about, you know, how they cultivate the soil over time so that they don't exhaust it. And this is it's so relevant to this idea of culture that you're building something which comes way before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to build this soil so that when you choose to put something in it, it will thrive.
Yeah, and he even mentioned how each plot, each section of the land, the soil reacts differently, and so they have to have different strategies for each plot of land to be able to grow what they want to grow in that area.
Yeah, and they choose different things to bring about different results,
which I think you can see the analogy here.
And importantly, he mentioned how as the climate has changed over time, which climates change. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not an ice age now; it used to be an ice age,
mm-hmm.
And that they've had to respond to that, which is also so relevant to what we're talking about as cultures change. As you know, the things that we have to deal with, our parents didn't have to deal with. The things our parents dealt with, their parents, you know, there's unique challenges in every generation. And so this is where we have to be wise in making some choices about establishing a culture, right? You have to have this baseline of a fruitful environment in which for things to grow.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just from a natural level, right? In order for you to have fruit or any kind of harvest, the environment has to be, the soil has to be good. Mm-hmm. You have to have sun,
right.
You have to have water, you have to do and like whatever the pH balance of the soil is, then you have to adapt accordingly in that aspect and maybe switch some things up, add more nitrogen, you know, take some things out. So like you have to be able to adapt and know what you're working with in order to have a fruitful harvest. And so I've been thinking about that in regards to father of establishing a culture in the family, a culture in the home, so that my family can thrive in the Christian life and what that means.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm not very good at and one thing that I would like to get better is protecting time for my wife to pray.
Mm.
guarding time for her.
Yeah.
I think we do a good job of family prayer. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Haley and I pray together. But I don't do a good job as a father as a husband of guarding her time to be able to pray. And I think that's a role that you know, we have to do, and we have to be aware of it, and we have to be strict about it. You know, we have to be able to really guard that for her.
Yeah.
So
to allow her feminine genius to also blossom.
And, yeah. Yeah. And so I think that, obviously, I think what happens between husband and wife echoes down into the family, right? So I think if you're looking to establish a Christian life within the home, the first thing that you have to address is husband and wife, because that will echo down into the rest and ripple down into the rest of the family.
Yeah, well, even before that, you know, since we're speaking directly to the men, you have to have your own prayer life first.
Sure, right.
You know, so it starts there. But, you know, then it very quickly comes into a cooperative situation with you and your wife, because you're not going to raise a family. You know, you can't build this culture by yourself. It
needs more ingredients. It needs more people.
That's right.
You know, it needs more. And so I was also thinking about, like, how, like, there are days in which you have, like, you have good days, you have bad days, right? You have days in which you feel like that I did not do very well. And then, like, days that you feel like you are thriving. And I was trying to think about how it's interesting that I could have one instance in the day that was negative, that directly impacts me, that I ruin the rest of the day, mm-hmm. thinking that today is now a bad day because of that one moment. And I think being able to be resilient and persevere is to be able to say, how long does it take me to get back to normal after either a good or a bad thing happens, so that I can adjust and keep and carry on and not let that affect me too much. And it's interesting how I have let 5 minutes in a day throw off the rest of my day.
Right.
And have a ripple effect down into my family, right? Like,
oh,
where it's like I have a bad business meeting or whatever, and I'm driving home,
yeah,
or somebody
one bad phone call, or someone
cuts me off in traffic on the way home, or you know, something happens and it throws off my day, throws off my kilter, and like it ruins the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And as men, we like as the head of the home, how we allow things to affect us also ripple, like, carries down into the rest of our family. I realized a couple weeks ago, I was kind of stressed out, and I realized that how I let a little portion of the day affect the rest of my vocation of the day, and how I was letting that moment live rent-free in my head.
Yeah.
And it affected the rest of my vocation. It affected the way I was reacting to my wife, and I was, you know, talking to her. It affected the way I was reacting to my kids and actually not actually being present to them.
Mm-hmm. You're just imperfect, bro.
I'm very, very imperfect. I have a lot of problems. But it made me think, okay, so what? How do I get back? Like, how do I reorient myself? Because if it starts with the husband, if it starts with the head of the house, how I act, how I'm present to my kids is very important. And we all have off days. But I think being resilient and being to persevere, what does that mean? It means, like, when you have a dip, when something happens and it goes negative in your day, how quickly can you get back to not allowing that to affect you any longer?
Yeah.
And that's something that I really struggle with personally. Like, that's something because I will let something live rent free in my head.
You know,
for
man,
far
I,
too
I
long.
Think I think that's a struggle for everybody. You know,
you actually don't struggle with that hardly at
I,
all.
I do. No, I definitely. It's definitely. I have days where that the scenario you're describing is me for sure. It's just one of those things that it takes a lot of practice and it takes habits. You have to develop the habits. You know, to do it really, really well, think you have to practice and practice being supple to the will of God through all kinds of ancillary habits like gratitude, but just having that constant reminder or constant presence of mind of the things that happen are incorporated into God's perfect will for your life. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when you have that bad conversation with a client or a business partner or you know, whatever it is, or maybe even a tough conversation with your wife, you know, that this is what you're called to do today, right? That this is something that this is part of your own growth in holiness. It's an important thing for your family as well. And just to that constant recollection of, you know, God's will be done in all things. Praise him for the trials. You know, I will have these moments of prayers like, oh, Lord, I just want to like, thank you for the trials until they come. Sure. You know, as soon as they show up, it's like, what is this? You know, like, what's that about?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, I was just praying about this 5 minutes ago. And then like how quickly I forget, just to remain in that receptive attitude towards divine providence.
And dwelling on the things that that are bad is that happened to you does not change what happened. Mm-hmm. It also does not. The only thing it can do is affect negatively in the future.
Right.
And so, anyway, if it starts with the man, if it starts with the head of the house, we have to be aware and conscious of the things that happen to you and impact you in a negative aspect. We cannot let those carry on into the home and let them bleed into other parts of our lives. I know that's easy to say. I struggle with it a lot. But I think, again, if we're setting the tone, if we're in the home, if we're establishing a culture of the Christian life in the home, we have to be able to allow things to impact us. And we have to persevere and we have to be resilient and be able to say, okay, I'll take that shot and keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, today we've had two great examples on St. Clair and St. Francis. You know, we're sitting there at the tomb of St. Clair's incorrupt body, you know, and all around her tomb, like as you're progressing, they have quotes on the wall, you know, where she's saying things like, you know, since I received the grace of God, no suffering has bothered, you know, has bothered me. Everything, all of these trials have been a joy. Now, that's it's a supernatural thing to say, okay?
Right. More of a supernatural thing to mean it.
To mean it, right. This is the result of grace in your life, right? Mm-hmm. When, you know, she's a saint, right? So this is what we're striving for. Then you look at St. Francis, who suffered tremendously at the end of his life. He went blind and was ill for years leading up to his death, but remained joyful throughout. I mean, it's just incredible to think about. How do you, it's like, okay, yeah, you're sick for a while. What if you're sick for 2 years and then you go blind? And you're like literally in darkness, both physically and spiritually at the end of your life, which is what happened to St. Francis. And to remain steadfast, to have that perseverance that you're talking about, you're not just going to be able to like, oh, listen to this episode and just decide, oh, yeah, I'll just do that. It's going to take practice and it's going to be really, really hard. But part of it is that, we just think, oh, I deserve for good things to happen to me. You don't deserve for any good. I mean, like, if we're talking about what you deserve or what you have earned, well, let's look at your sins.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
These are the results of your sins are really the only thing that you deserve. Now, God's grace is scandalous, right? That his mercy would be offered so readily, completely, all the time.
Infinitely.
To everybody.
Right, infinitely.
Right. I mean, his mercy in my life, it's almost it is scandalous, right? But he offers it so willingly. So part of it is having this, you know, what are our expectations, managing expectations in your own life? Like, do you actually deserve for things to go well?
Right.
You don't. Now, by God's grace, he is so good. Often they do. Sometimes they go tremendously well.
Mm-hmm.
But if we think that's what it ought to be, then when those trials come, it's easy to see why it's difficult to deal with, because we think, well, we deserve for all of these, you know, great, wonderful things. Like, that's what it ought to be. In reality, it's the opposite. It ought to be very, you know, tremendously difficult. Those are the things we've earned because of our own sinfulness.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's that attitude of gratitude. I know that's such a cliche thing to say, but it really is the key to so much happiness in life, to maintaining peace and just remembering God's will be done for me all the time. Trials, goodness, it's all His will.
Mm-hmm.
Praise be God for it.
One thing I think that, you know, reading about, you know, St. Clair and St. Francis and even, you know, St. Carlos here in Assisi, is there's one thing that saints all have in common, and it's focus. It's the focus of becoming a saint, of understanding my strategy in life is to focus on the most important things in life and devote my time and energy and efforts and all that I do for Him who gives me the time. It's a gift that He gives me, and so I want to give it back to Him. And saints focus on the most important things in life, and that's why we give them the ST in front of their names, you know, after they die, is because, like, they ran the race, they ran to win it, and they did. And so, as dads, as husbands and fathers, I have come to realize more and more as my children are growing and new issues, new problems, new things that come up that are trials and tribulations, that remaining focused on what the most important things are and what I'm called to do is so much more important than all these other things, regardless, you know, all the other noise that the world provides, you know, regardless of the media, news, social media, you know, whatever it is, this is all noise that causes distractions and causes frustrations and makes you like want to pick sides. There's tribalism. There's all these different things that cause unrest, that cause you to lose your peace. And it's because that, like, when that happens, is because it's a lack of focus on what you're actually supposed to be doing.
Yeah. So how do you maintain that? You know,
the focus?
Yeah, how do you maintain that focus when you've got Facebook, X,
yeah, so
YouTube?
I think you have to be...
I mean, it's just these constant distractions.
It's a disciplined life that's required.
Yeah, but they want to entertain you, and they are entertaining, you know.
It's hard enticing.
So how do you... Yeah. What do you do? What do you do in your life to maintain that focus?
So the realization that I had that every stage in life... I feel like, okay, I am maxed out. I have this tendency of, like, either overcommitting or just, like, working to the nth degree. And I feel like, man, I am so maxed out.
You are the prototypical overcommitter.
Oh, yeah. There's just no way I could do anything else. But each stage in life, I found that it's actually not that I can't do anymore. It's that I'm not putting the right priorities to be able to get them done. It's that I'm not actually using my time wisely. And working hard and being focused and disciplined takes like high intensity effort, and also the realization of where you're using your time. So let me give you an example. Like, one of the things that I decided to do is I took a stopwatch throughout my workday and literally clocked what I did and how long it took. And I realized that the times in which I thought I was putting intense effort into something, is like, that was actually only about 25 minutes. And then, like, I got up because I was thirsty, or I had to go to the restroom, or, like, I got a phone call, or, I got a text message, or a Slack message or email or some, you know, some kind of other distraction from intense work. And that was my realization of, sorry, I'm trying to find a lighter for you. You're just struggling over there with your pipe. There it is.
You're trying to keep your focus on what you're saying and getting distracted and, by the fact that my lighter is not working. Yeah.
But I realized, okay, so I realized that I actually did not have the habit of remaining focused for a long time. That because I had all these distractions in my life. So, okay, so what does this actually mean? Like, why am I talking about this? It's because I realized that my time was being so fragmented that I did not have focus in my life, and I was able to have other things seep into the time that I had allotted for the higher important things. So how does that affect your family life? That I have realized that there are times in which I put painting the fence, mowing the yard, tending to the chickens, you know, doing these things around the house that are important, but I use them as to be busy so that I don't do the harder things to remain focused, namely to be a father, to be a husband, to be present. It's much easier to say like, hey, I got to go out there and do another project outside when your kids are going crazy inside, or
yeah.
You know, things are kind of not at peace in the home. And so what is peace? The tranquility of order. It's our job as fathers and husbands to create that order in the home so that they can thrive. So I have found that how my business life, how I live my business life reflects also how I live in the home. Or even vice versa.
You take the same. You take the habits. You take them. You take your habits home with you.
Right. So that hit me hard. Like on how I was, because I am always busy. I'm always like willing to be occupied with something.
Get the next email out. Yeah.
Yeah. Or the next project done in my home.
Yeah.
But am I willing to put the stopwatch on and say like, how long am I being present to my kids? How long am I praying with my kids? How long am I playing with my kids? How long am I serving my wife? And this, the Catechism 2223 talks about how we're supposed to cultivate a household of disinterested service. To be able to say, like, there's no quid pro quos. This is not something that, like, hey, look, dad's doing something over here. You know, look at me. I expect, you know, everybody to be paying attention here because I'm taking, you know, I'm cleaning the dishes or I'm playing with the kids or I'm, you know, like taking the trash out without being asked or anything like that. But no, if we're wanting our children to be able to serve, which ultimately the Christian life is nothing but service.
Right.
And disinterested service is ordered in love. It is serving out of love for the other, not to get repaid, but out of just the love of God. Then we have to cultivate that within ourselves. That's something that I also realized is that I was allowing myself to be busy doing things in, and it affected how I was actually being a husband and father.
So the one of the ways that this is what I'm hearing you say is, you know, how do you focus, maintain that focus that we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you started keeping score.
Yeah.
And because you don't realize...
You just don't realize how much time you waste.
Yeah. Yeah. That you just don't... You know, that's like when you do Exodus 90, especially the first time you do it.
Right.
You just didn't realize how much time that you spent doing all of these other things, you know, like on your phone or, you know, things that are actually weren't even goals. You know, things that you don't... That you would objectively say, these are not priorities for me. And
right.
But yet... You spend a disproportionate amount of time on them. So until you start keeping score, sometimes it's just not obvious that
right.
that's what you're
and
doing.
And I realize that strategy is actually just being able to keep the top priorities in focus for a long period of time.
Keep the main thing.
That's all strategy. Like the definition, I think, of strategy is that.
Yeah. So I grew up in a household that I think, you know, every family has, you know, different priorities, the different things that they do. One of the things that was kind of big in my family were traditions, okay? Things like when we went on vacation, we did the same thing. You know, we have this, you know, we had this cabin that's been in my family in northern Michigan for years and years and years that when we go on vacation, that's where we went. And when we go to the cabin, we do these same things every year. And we look forward to like, oh, doing these things when we go on, you know, go up to the cabin. Mm-hmm. And so tradition was sort of a big thing in our family. And it was fun, right? And I really think that was very beneficial for me because as I started, you know, having my own family, I also had this kind of natural inclination to begin traditions. And I think that traditions are absolutely crucial to establishing the culture that you want. You know, the more I have pondered and the more I've learned and considered what tradition is simply wisdom in action, right? That a tradition develops, especially culturally speaking, mm-hmm. because the people who have come before you have found something to be good, and they have handed on this goodness to you in the form of a tradition. And for the people receiving this tradition, it's not always apparent why this is the right thing or a good thing to do. Because you have, you know, the young don't have that experience to see vice versa. Okay, you know, if we don't do this or if we do, you know. So having traditions that you can establish in your family, it gets to the root, I think, of building real culture, mm-hmm. starting to have that family soil that you can now start to really cultivate things in.
And one of the duties as a grandfather is to be this custodian, this guardian of the tradition. And in order to have that virtue, you have to develop it as a father. You have to have that tradition. And if your family didn't have traditions, like, it's your job as the dad to develop these traditions, to guard them and pass them on to your kids and keep that in your family. One of the most beautiful things that I think my grandfather did before he passed every year is before Christmas and Easter, he would sit our families down. He would sit down at the fireplace and he'd have all of our family around, and he'd kind of give just a state of the union, so to speak, for our family of just like, here's how I, as a man who's been on this earth for 75 plus years, am seeing the world. Here's how I see there will be problems. There could be problems, the crosses that you're going to have to carry, how I feel like that our family, like where our family is going, what they're doing, what we're doing well, what we're not, and what we need to be aware of.
I think that is so incredible. Like, this is amazing because I think for grandparents, sometimes there's this tendency to think like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I want to let my kids, it's their family. I don't want to like cross any boundaries. And that's important. I mean, you have to respect, you know, hey, you're a grandfather, you know, let your kids be the parents of their children. And you have to respect boundaries. But that doesn't mean that you are not still the patriarch of your family. Okay, right. You have not been relegated to the sidelines. You've been elevated,
right,
to a new distinction. Mm-hmm. So the difference between those two things is huge.
Right.
Okay,
because as a dad, you're in the trenches. That's
right.
You're busy. You have blinders on, and sometimes you can't see the bigger picture, mm-hmm. Because you are literally in the trenches. The grandparents are one step removed from that, and sometimes can, through their wisdom of being alive for as long as they have and the time that they have to see the bigger picture, they can see things that you can't. And then they can provide advice, encouragement. They can let you know about things that maybe you didn't see. And so, again, I think that one of the main vocations that a grandfather has is to be that custodian of tradition.
Right. Yeah. So as a grandfather, I think you're called to a new level of holiness. first and foremost, right? That your vocation for your children has not ended, right? That it's still your job to pray for your children every day, and now for your grandchildren every day, right? In fact, the burden on your shoulders has grown. But, you know, the Lord has ordained life in such a way that, you know, you now have probably more time and more a greater capacity for that prayer life. And so that I think if you're going to establish traditions in your family as a father or a grandfather, you know, because it's not too late to build traditions as a grandfather, I would say focus those traditions around the high feasts, right? At like what you're saying at Christmas, okay? Like one of the things that we do in our family is we get together Christmas morning, you know, we're going to open all these presents. It's just, you know, obviously Christmas is the best.
Of course.
Before we open any presents, either I or my dad, who, you know, whoever is available, will read the nativity story from the Bible. Get out the Bible. Don't do it from your phone. And we read the nativity. And this is how we begin, you know, that awesome day of Christmas. We start with the Christ child in that story of, you know, out of the Gospel of Luke. And that, you know, it's such an easy thing to do. And once you start to have, once you do it for a few years, the kids get excited for it because they also know, hey, as soon as we do this, we're opening presents, right? Mm-hmm, that's totally fine for them to be excited for it in that way, right?
And same with donuts at the end of Mass.
Totally. All of that stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, if we're going to establish traditions, establish them first and foremost around the high feasts. Having vacation traditions, like I mentioned, that's great. Totally less important than having traditions around some of the high feast days of whatever is important to you as a family. You know, maybe it's Corpus Christi. You know, hopefully you have something for Christmas and Easter, but, you know, the culture of your family will take its own shape, but it ought to take shape around the celebrations that are the most real in life.
So there's four things that I've come up with. These are not exclusive. These are not like the only things that you should do, but
these are Adam's four things.
Yeah. These are the things that I have come up with that I've thought like, these are the important things that I want to cultivate in my home, that I want to establish in my home. Okay. And again, I'm not saying that these are the only four things. I'm not saying that
it sounds like you're saying that these are the only four things.
Yeah, exactly. Silence. So I'll give you the four and then we can unpack these. Okay.
So far I think it's just really strong. Strong
silence,
start.
Reverence, hard work, charity. These are the four things in which I've like been thinking about and said, like, what are the most important things in my family that I think I need to do in order to cultivate the Christian life? Okay, silence. The only way you can learn how to pray is being able to quiet your appetites. God's language is silence, as Cardinal Ross talks about the power of silence. In order for us to have a prayer life, we have to be able to quiet our senses and our appetites. That does not happen naturally. That is not something that the world is offering to us. That is something that the world is constantly going to be attacking our children and ourselves with. And so in order to have that virtue of silence, it has to start within the home. Children don't learn to be quiet in Mass. That's only an hour long of the week. They learn to be quiet in the home. They exercise what they learn in the home at Mass. If we want to set our kids up to succeed, we shouldn't expect them to have 1 hour a week in which they're supposed to do something and they're supposed to excel at it.
Correct.
That's not how life works. That's not how life works. I think silence is crucial to cultivating a life of prayer within the home. Reverence. I think in a world that is completely irreverent, reverence is like the next. Like, reverence is kind of the unorthodox, or like, you know, it's kind of the rebellious thing to do.
Sure.
in the world, because they're not used to having reverence, what that truly means. And reverence is oriented towards higher goods. And it starts with manners from a natural level of being able to say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. It's being able to know what, having reverence for the Eucharist, passing by a church and making the sign of the cross out of respect for the Eucharist.
Yeah.
You can't love, like if you don't respect something, if you don't have reverence for it, it's hard to love it.
Oh, absolutely.
And so
that's a great point.
And so, if we want our children to love the Eucharist, which is the source and summit of our faith, if we want them to go to adoration, we have to have them have silence. They have to get used to silence, and they have to have cultivate reverence, reverence for their family, reverence for their civil leaders, reverence for the supernatural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, piety.
Hard work. I think that you can excel in this life if you understand what hard work is, because in today's world, very few actually do hard work. And so, if you want to excel not only from a natural level, like in business or in just the secular world, like if you want to excel in it, be a hard worker, because you're going to outperform 90% of the people out there, because they're not going to know what hard work is. They're not going to be able to push themselves. This is the beauty of the value of sports, the value of chess, the value of drama, the value of because it pushes you intellectually, physically, to the point past where you think that you're able to go, and your body says, "No, I can keep going." Hard work will also play a big role in prayer, because prayer in seasons of life will be very difficult. It'll be something that you don't want to do. Fasting will be something that you don't want to do. But if you've learned to be disciplined and be able to work hard and go past the point of where your mind says, don't go any further, that will get you further than 90+ percent of the
sure.
population.
Yeah.
This is what the saints, you don't think the saints worked hard? You don't think they understood what hard work was? Like, of course they did.
And they're not smarter than you.
They're not smart. It has nothing to do with intelligence.
Yeah.
It has everything to do with drive and determination.
Sure.
It's like magnanimity. Charity. This is obviously the one, the pinnacle, the crescendo of the Christian life is to be able to punch somebody in pure charity. Right, as we talked about last week.
Looking at you, St. Nicholas.
Yeah. Or Stanley Rother. Blessed Stanley Rother. As we talked about last week. But I think each one of these build upon each other. I think silence helps with reverence. I think reverence helps you focus on being able to be determined in hard work. And all of these cultivate a love, a deeper love.
Absolutely.
For our Lord, and obviously then for our neighbor.
Right. Yeah, I really love the four things that, yes, these are so great. And obviously, you've put them in the right order. Silence is essentially saying no. It's learning to say no to everything that you don't want to say yes to. Mm-hmm. You've decided what to say yes to, and so you have to say no to everything else for the sake of the yes. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of chastity, that if you can't say no, your yes means nothing. Mm-hmm. Okay? So learning to say no to the things that are not what you're striving for in life, namely holiness.
And the tough thing about that is that as you develop and you like kind of unlock new achievements in life, that it opens up doors to say yes to a lot of new things, because you're getting better at things. You're
right.
Getting better at life. And so the better you get at life, the more opportunities come your way, the more possibilities come your way, and the more distractions actually can kind of creep into your life, or you say yes to certain things that you should say no to, because you have to stay focused, as we talked about earlier, and saying yes to the right things.
So all of these things are an outward expression of an inward choice that you have made. So silence, it's like, all right, you've chosen to pursue certain things. So now you're having to actually put this in practice and say no to all of these other things. And all right, so you've chosen your goals, you've chosen your values, you're saying no to the other things. And because you've chosen these things, now you're going to have reverence for these things. So once again, you're putting an incarnation into it, right? You're fleshing it out in your own life. And this often it comes down to things like, what do you wear to Holy Mass? How do you dress your children for mm-hmm. Holy Mass? These seem like simple, unimportant things sometimes in the chaos of life, but they aren't, right? Reverence, it really comes down to how do you comport yourself throughout your life in the things that you have chosen to say yes to, okay? And it builds a love of those things, right? If you put effort into, we are going to dress a certain way when we go to Mass, just using that as an example. Your children and you, in a very real way, learn that Mass is important to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, you're going to learn to love it. If you love it, you will begin to work hard for it. Okay, and so if you're developing a silence and you're revering these things, it's only natural that you will put an effort for them. Okay, and so you'll have this hard work and discipline, and that also helps you love. Just naturally, it will come about, which makes charity facilitates mm-hmm. that charity. So the silence, reverence, discipline, or hard work
mm-hmm.
builds in a very natural. I mean, this is the order, you know, what we've talked about before in other episodes, that ladder of love, that you will naturally ascend to what is otherwise naturally impossible, mm-hmm. which is charity, right? Charity is only, it's only supernaturally possible. For the secular person, charity, it simply is not possible, right? If you're living a secular life, apart from the grace of God, you might do things that are nice, that outwardly look, it's a really nice thing for you to do. But at the end of the day, you're probably loving yourself, okay? You feel good about it. And, you know, I'm doing this because I feel like a good person when I do these things, which is not charity, okay? The charity we're talking about is actually love of God. Out of love for Him, I do these things for others, or however that charity is taking form, right? So it has to start with silence. You have to be willing to say no. Silence is just a big no. It's a no. I'm saying no, 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 no to all of these things, so that I might say yes to only the things I desire, which I begin to revere, which I will naturally work for, which inflames my soul with charity for those things I have selected.
Yeah. So anyway, that was just what was on my heart the last couple of weeks and I thought, like, well, you asked me, like, hey, what are we going to talk about today? And I was like, well.
I dig it. I would just really encourage people to spend some time in prayer thinking about, hey, what are the traditions that we have in our family?
Mm-hmm.
What might be some things we could change or some things we can improve upon, and go think about who it is in your life. Who do you look up to? Hopefully you have good people in your parish or good people in your community that you look, because I certainly know I do. There are a handful of families that every time I see them, I just think that's who I want to be. Like, mm-hmm. these are the people that really bless me because they're just so, they put on such a witness of the beauty of family life and doing it so well in an ordered and charitable, holy way. So if you don't really know what, go talk to those people, take them out to lunch
mm-hmm.
and get some ideas from them. And, you don't have to do the things that they do because maybe that doesn't work for you. But I would just really challenge people to spend a lot of time thinking about this, because this is the pursuit, right? We are all called to stewardship, right? Everything you have, all your talents, all your money, all your gifts, literally everything is a gift from God. He has given it to you, just like the parable of the talents, mm-hmm. that for you to cultivate, to build his kingdom. And, you know, it's stewardship is basically that everything, 100% belongs to God, of all of your things. In no time in your life will stewardship be more important than with your children. Your children are an immense gift from God. He has given these children to you, but the thing is, he is going to want them back. These are souls in your care to cultivate, mm-hmm. and to grow. So you need to be creating that good soil in your family, in your home, mm-hmm. literally in the four walls of your house, so that these children become the people that God created them to be. You know, one of the things I've been thinking about, because here in Italy, it's just everywhere you go, there are these amazing churches. You know, you stand out in the, you know, in front of these churches, and you just are, it's astonishing, mm-hmm. the beauty, the craftsmanship, and just the, they're huge, they're grandiose, and it's just, it's hard to look at them and not be inspired. And what I was really thinking about over the last couple of days is just with the immensely gorgeous these churches are, not a single one they all pale in comparison to the beauty of a single human soul. That every single soul has a beauty immensely, infinitely beyond the man-made creations of these insanely gorgeous churches. Mm-hmm. And so it just was really, really thinking about the beauty of the human soul, looking at some of these churches and how much we ought to be the craftsmen of the souls in our care, mm-hmm. namely, and most importantly, you know, our wife, our spouses, and our children.
Yeah. So just as we talked about at the beginning of the show that, you know, in the vineyards, each soil has different needs and desires, and to remain, and we talked about to remain focused on the greatest things. It's important for us as men, as fathers, as husbands, to take a step back from being in the trenches and to assess where our family is, what our family needs are, and then establish the focus to achieve those ends. And that's going to look different each stage of life. Where I am now looks different than it did 10 years ago and 5 years ago. And then come up with what is needed in my family right now. What do I need to establish in my family to lead my family to Christ?
Praise God.
And then stay focused on it.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers.